My first guests this morning are Vanessa Pike-Verdiak, co-director of The Good Body, an Eve Ensler play that's at the Lenzic tomorrow night, and Lucy Madeline, one of the actresses in that play. And I hope you'll all stay tuned for our second segment today. We'll have cultural historian Lois Rudnick and Miles Conway, communications director for the AFSCME Union, and we're going to talk about the 60th anniversary of the film Salt of the Earth. Welcome, Vanessa and Lucy.
Hi, welcome to you too.
I'm so glad you're here. So you're doing The Good Body, a play by Eve Ensler, who is the, for those, does anyone not know, the author of The Vagina Monologues, which became an international sensation since it was first produced off-Broadway in 1996. And one of the spin-offs, one of the big outcomes of The Vagina Monologues was Ensler's creation of something called V-Day, an international global activist event held each year aimed at stopping violence against women and children. So April 22 is V-Day, right?
Actually, V-Day is
February 14th.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, but and they have V-Day runs. We have to do the play even in a certain amount of time from February to the end of April is when we celebrate the whole chunk of time.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the performance tomorrow night is a fundraiser for the New Mexico Women's Foundation, which encourages entrepreneurship among poor women, does micro grants, mentorship programs. It's an amazing organization. So there's a silent raffle at 6:30 p.m. at the Lenzic, and the curtain on the show is at 7. I suggest you show up and take 5 friends. there's plenty of room, and it's not expensive. We don't talk about ticket prices, as you know, on public radio, but it's something you can all afford. So before we start, I wanted to read a little bit from Ensler's introduction of The Good Body, from her book on which the play was based. So she wrote this during the Iraq War. I think it was 2004. So she wrote, "Maybe because my stomach is one thing I feel I have control over, or maybe because I have hoped that my stomach is something I could get control over. Maybe because I see how my stomach has come to occupy my attention. I see how other women's stomachs, or butts, or thighs, or hair, or skin have come to occupy their attention, so that we have very little left for the war in Iraq, or much else for that matter. Maybe I've bought into the idea that if my stomach were flat, then I would be good, and I would be safe. I would be protected. I would be accepted, admired, important, loved. Maybe because for most of my life I have felt wrong, dirty, guilty, and bad, and my stomach is the carrier, the pouch for all that self-hatred." Whew, pretty heavy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been talking for a little while already this morning about this play. Tell me why this is an important... Well, tell us first, Vanessa, about the structure of this play.
Yeah, so the structure of this play, Eve is kind of known for having various monologues throughout her productions. I had the pleasure in the past, I'm from Northern California, of directing The Vagina Monologues, Any One of Us, About Women in Prison, A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, A Prayer, and they're all kind of set up like that, like... several monologues, and I think the reason, my guess, that she does that is to really honor the stories that she gathers and really hold space for that. So this play is set up just like that. However, Mika and I, my co-director Mika Tari, we worked really hard at integrating the other characters throughout the scene. So it's more of like a conversation, like with your girlfriends about your body. Almost everybody has another person in their scene with the, well, Lucy's is a little different. She plays Tiffany, and hers isn't a conversation, more of like a man hovering behind her who has done all this work to her
and my husband
changed her body. Uh-huh. Yeah, but that's maybe the only one that's a little different in terms of setup like that.
So it's a series of dialogues, actually, where there are different stories of different women and their relationships to their bodies in one way or another.
Yes.
And then in each of these little dialogues, there's a main character, and then there's a secondary sort of character.
Yes. Exactly.
And the women come from all different cultures, all different demographics. It's really like the global voice of women around their body issues. It's not just like Western women's body issues.
And go on, Lucy, explain to us sort of the, in a nutshell, what is this about?
Oh my gosh. It's really about women's relationships to their bodies, how they love their body, how they hate their body, the way that they hate their body. One of my favorite lines in the play is, it's actually from Eve. Eve has a character in the play. And actually, just to elaborate further, the narrative is Eve Ensler is trying to come to terms with her body image issues, and she goes and speaks to these different women to kind of hear their story and hear their perspective and integrate it into her own view about her body. And there's a line where she talks about just how much everything she's tried to do to sedate and erase her stomach, and how it's her feeling about her body has interfered with her ability to work. And so that's kind of the nutshell right there, like how our body image issues actually impact our lives on a daily basis, like what we're able to do, what we, the choices we make, things like that.
And is it, is this, it's not all serious, right?
Oh, God, no. It's actually quite hilarious. There's a lot of humor.
And tell us about your character, Lucy.
Okay, so my character is Tiffany, and she is a 35-year-old supermodel.
Oh, you're having to play someone much older than you are.
Yes. Not so much older, but
the
thank
two
you.
Women I'm sitting with this morning, these two beautiful women I'm sitting with this morning, Vanessa and Lucy, are both 27, is that right?
I actually just turned 28, full disclosure.
Oh, my goodness, full disclosure, yes. Well, full disclosure, yeah. I could be your mother. Yeah, so we were having a little fun with that. So sorry, dear, go ahead.
No, so I have married my plastic surgeon. And our relationship consists of him sort of evaluating my body and making decisions about how he should cut it and sort of barbarically alter it to make it more perfect. And my interpretation of this woman is that, this is not someone who's being empowered by plastic surgery. This is not someone who's finding liberation in the altercation of her body. This is a woman who is traumatized by, consistent surgeries, by being in a marriage that is, she's constantly in the male gaze. There's no reprieve for her. And Cecile Lipworth came to give a little preview of our show before she went off to Rome. And it's the nightmare. It's like the ultimate nightmare. You're actually married to the male gaze. And there's a line where, just every aspect of our relationship is about me and my body. So
say some more about the male gaze and what you mean by that.
Oh, I would love to. The male gaze is actually a cinematic term that comes from French cinema and criticism of that. But it talks about how, particularly in film, how all the images are set up to be looked at by men. And if you look at the images in the film, you can see that they're all about the ways that men look at women's bodies, and also the ways that men look at the world, the way that they look at themselves, how they see the world. And most of our media and culture, whether it's literature, film, TV, magazines, is framed from this perspective of the male gaze.
Oh, and you can see that particularly in Blue is the Warmest Color. If either of you saw that.
No,
film,
I don't know that.
Very, very, very much the male gaze. It's actually about two women in a lesbian relationship.
Oh, wow.
But it's definitely filmed from in the male
gaze. Fantasy
of the male
two women.
Fantasy, exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So, Vanessa, why don't you tell me about some of the other characters that show up in the dialogues?
Yeah, so one of my favorite characters actually is Bernice, and she's hilarious. That's played by Bernadette Pena. She's a teacher at Capitol High School, and she is a woman that had to go to fat camp, and she's talking about her experience there and showing up at fat camp and there being the skinny beep. I don't know if I can say a bad word.
Beep works.
Yeah, skinny beep. And her experience with, sneaking in food and feeling the judgments from the skinny girls and her herself, the conflicts that she's having with being in fat camp. And she has this beautiful moment where she talks about swimming in a pool in the middle of the night and not having to wear skinny girl bathing suits and just being free in her body and her roundness and loving herself. And it's just really reflective. And another piece in the play is about a woman in India, Priya, played by Diana Reyes. I'm hoping I'm saying your last name right, Diana. And that is like most of our favorite piece. That's all about, she talks about her jati, which is fat in India, and being on the treadmill. And it's just so funny, the comedy of getting on the treadmill and like all the women are competing to get on the treadmill. And at one point they actually get on it together and walk together, march together. And And she talks about Miss India being Miss Universe and how starving she was when she finally got there. It's just, it's amazing. And like Lucy said, all these stories from around the world and it just not being this one perspective. So I think the audience will really appreciate that.
And I love, going back to, I love what you read at the beginning. Going back to that, what I really appreciate about Eve's work in general, and especially in this play, is that, you know, the more educated we become and the more involved in women's issues we become, you start to be aware of what's happening to women all over the world, like FGM, forced marriage, the sex trade, and you can start to feel like your body image issues are just,
FGM,
you know.
FGM meaning female genital mutilation.
Yes, yes, which is really widespread and also a major part of Eve's work. Mm-hmm. But you can start to feel like you're, you know, your fat camp experience or your, you know, body image issues just are like trivial and don't matter. And it can be hard to put a voice to the actual debilitating shame that that creates. And I love that about this play is that it really covers the whole spectrum. Like,
yes.
We're in India, but we're talking about women starving to be Miss Universe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, well, and to hold that paradox.
Yes.
I mean, that's the point. And to not diminish our own suffering only because it is defined by first world values.
Exactly.
Right. But, you know, our pain and suffering and shame about our bodies is not life-threatening, as is the difficulties many women face in other parts of the world. But it's just as painful to us as individuals.
And it can be life-threatening. Just like, you know, before the show, you were talking about anorexia. And just, you know, there was that supermodel who died of anorexia a few years ago, and women who are dying, but they look fantastic, you know, and so we don't understand it in the same way that we might be able to understand women starving because of poverty. We can understand women choosing to starve in the West. It doesn't seem like a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really appreciate that Eve is really giving voice to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that this play has never become as widely known as the Vagina Monologues. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because Eve did the recording of the Vagina Monologues, and that is broadcast. You know, or that's,
you mean,
you know,
the HBO,
accessible.
The HBO special.
I assume it was HBO, but
yes.
I know she's on stage. She's fabulous. It's amazing. Everyone should check that out. And I don't know about you, Vanessa. We're the same age, and I remember that came out. You know, I was in high school. And it was just sort of as this just crescendo from the 80s of sort of the beauty myth coming back into the media and sort of really harsh stereotypes and standards coming back for women after the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And then the Vagina Monologues came out, and it was like this, for me, in my generation, for me, it was the first, again, radical experience I had of sort of, let's change how we view culture. I just think it was a game changer, and I wonder if it's possible to have that twice, you know, we're sort of in that.
Yeah, and what I would think too, honestly, is I think the word vagina.
Yes.
Honestly, you know, like, I mean, a lot of people don't even get to say that word, and even when I'm telling people about the play, like, I'm like, oh, it's the author of the Vagina Monologues, people still, like, cover their mouths, like, what did you say? You know, I think it really strikes people. So versus the good body, people are like, oh, well, explain that a little more. It doesn't lend itself,
right.
You know?
Yeah,
true.
There's still in our culture a titillation factor to the word vagina or sensationalism, you know, that does draw attention to it.
Yeah.
And it was very radical. In the way she wrote about it. But I want to talk about something, well, two things. Let's talk about, Vanessa, you want to talk about how this play affects men. Now, you guys did a performance Saturday night just for students, and then you had a Q&A afterward, right? So talk to me about the response you got, particularly from men.
Well, there were probably like 5 to 10 men in the audience. It was a really small number, unfortunately. And one woman actually stood up and asked a question to the men in the audience, how they responded to the play. And one man, he had tears in his eyes, and he was talking about how he feels connected to the play because he himself can't find solace in being popular or being the jock. He can't really connect to these ideas, and so he felt like he could connect to us. However, it's such a fine line with, you know, being able to connect to women in our stories, but also, like, honoring that it's not the same, you know? And so I thought
it's not the same.
The experience is not the same because, I mean, most people know this, but women are still not getting paid as much as men. Women And many families that I serve, I work at Las Cumbres, so many women are controlled by their partners, have to be present when I'm there because the partner's going to be making the decision for the woman, ultimately, in regards to her body and her baby. Mm-hmm. And I just think being able to honor that is really important. However, I think men are absolutely critical to being a part of the conversation. I have coordinated this event called Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, and men wear high heels and they walk a mile, and I did it at home for North Coast Rape Crisis Team, and there was a lot of criticism about it. Yeah, and it's all over the world. People do it. But what I love about that event is ultimately men hold the key to changing this. Men are the one, for the most part, statistically raping women. So if men can change their perspective about what's going on in our culture and our society, even how they view women in the media and in commercials and in movies, that I think that can change the world. I mean, we can only rise up so much, and without the support and allies of men, it's just going to stay the same. I mean, that's just how I feel. I hope I don't offend any listeners
That. So well said. I'm talking with Vanessa Pike-Verdiak and Lucy Madeline, who are putting on with some other women The Good Body, Eve Ensler's play about women and body image, tomorrow night at the Lenzic. There's a silent auction at 6:30. The play starts at 7. It benefits the New Mexico Women's Foundation, which helps poor women and children around our state. I wanted to Lucy, to go back to something we were talking to before we came on the air, and that is how your generation of women are different than older generations, how image media image has affected them more.
I love that question. You know, first I think it's important to say that so much has changed culturally. So much more is available to my generation because of your generation and the women even before that, that is often taken for granted by women my age, truly. So thank you. And I'm an artist and an activist, and I have been doing this work for some time, and something I've often run into is this thought from sort of second wave feminists that, you know, what are you complaining about? Like, what could possibly be so bad about your experience right now? Like, you can do anything. You have access to education. You are, like, right there in the workforce. You have role models. You're not having to start anything, you know, from scratch. And that is absolutely true. But the other thing that, you know, I feel is very important is that something I said right before we went on air is that children born after 86, 88 have seen more images through media. Just the media we consume is outrageous, and it's more images that anyone born before that time could ever consume in a lifetime. And the majority of that imagery is of the female body or of the male gaze at the female body. You know, it's not just women's bodies, like, right? Like, we all know that. It's very clear. It's very specific woman-shaped bodies. They're not even realistically representing what women's bodies actually look like. And, you know, just everything from growing up in a culture where women are having surgery to change their bodies, and in some microcultures might be expected to have surgery to change their bodies. And, or for example, you know, you have this woman in Russia now, the human doll, who's had, she talks about plastic surgery like she doesn't even think it's plastic surgery. She says, oh, well, of course I got my nose done, and of course I got implants, but that's not really plastic surgery. And you know, everything, you know, body hair, all of these very pervasive assaults towards women's self-esteem and sense of wholeness and sense of, you know, our right to exist and to be here as we are. There was an interesting backlash in the 80s after the women's movement in the 70s that said, sure, you can come to work. So now women are in the workforce, but now we're going to cut you down by saying that you only get to really have power if you look like this.
And, oh, yeah, it's like the television models for this I love. You know, The Good Wife or all these beautiful women who are professionals wearing clothes cut down to their navels because that, the male gaze, again, right?
Yes.
You know, I can be successful if I show you my breasts at work.
Yes, and I have to look, it's got to be designer, and and the real power I have is in winning in this sort of body way, winning in this beauty way. There was just a thing that went out on Jezebel, one of my favorite feminist blogs, everyone should read it, where there was actually instruction for women to wear dress suits, skirt suits, and not pants suits.
Just simply
because this is the way the world is, and mm-hmm. you know, if you really want to compete in a man's world, you've just got to know the rules and play the game. Never asking, like, how does that standard actually affect the way a woman feels, conducts herself at work, at home? Not to mention, you know, the people talk about this a lot. I think it's kind of becoming cliche now, but this sort of Wonder Woman expectation.
Right.
You know, we're supposed to love ourselves. We're supposed to be the source of our own self-esteem. We're supposed to work for ourselves, take care of ourselves, raise children alone.
Hopefully you'll start your own business and become a multimillionaire
yeah.
in your spare time.
And yeah. do a really good job raising your children uh-huh. because mm-hmm. it's still such a taboo to choose to not have children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for women who want to have children. You know, how do you... It also, I think something that's really hard right now is just finding partnership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially for heterosexual women, I think, not that it's not hard for everyone, but just this idea of, like, the role of men.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how, for me, my experience is being so involved in feminism, and I have an amazing partner who is also very involved in feminism and really is interested in that conversation, but it's like, where are the partners for women? Like, how do we also go through this world and, like, we're just supposed to be okay with being completely self-supporting and self-sufficient mm-hmm. emotionally and spiritually. So I think it's a very unusual kind of pressure that is debilitating and needs a voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think a lot of men get really turned off by the idea of when we show emotion or frustration or anger about not having enough as women or enough support or enough allies. It reminds me of Take Back the Night. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't attend that event. A lot of men don't attend that event because they feel like it's a male-bashing, man-hating event.
Right.
And I think it's really, it makes me really sad. And I don't feel like the good body is like that at all. Mm-hmm. So I really hope for all the men listeners out there, you know, that you can come out to the play and feel like you can support this event and this cause. And really honor women, because I don't feel like at all it's male bashing. Don't you agree? Like,
oh my gosh, no.
Total opposite. Yeah, I really feel
besides.
Like that. Yeah.
Well, I've been talking to Vanessa Pike Vertiak and Lucy Madlin. Tomorrow night at the Lensic, The Good Body, a play by Eve Ensler, known for the Magina Monologues. 6:30, there's a silent auction. The show starts at 7 o'clock. I hope you'll all show up and bring your men. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a break right now. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.